I, on the other hand, like was very in denial that I was experiencing any kind of depression because I was afraid of what that might mean. Right. And so I denied it and just tried to press on, and that's the best way to make it worse.
I'm Lily Cornell Silver, and welcome to Mind Wide Open, my mental health focused interview series. Today, I am talking to Alexi Pappas, Olympic runner, writer, filmmaker, and actress. And today, we're going to be talking about our similar experiences losing a parent to suicide, her struggles with depression and suicidal ideation after the 2016 Olympic Games, and what taking care of ourselves looks like now. Thank you so much for watching, and I hope you enjoy.
Hi, Alexi. How are you?
Hello. I am great. How are you?
I'm good. It's so nice to meet you. It's so nice to speak with you. I'm so excited.
Thank you for having me. And I love your setup. You're like inside of the moon. Or is it a moon behind you?
It is a moon. That was kind of my, when I put it there, I was like, oh, I look like I'm in like the DreamWorks logo or something.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I love that. If anyone's trying to imagine it, it's as if she has like an emoji of a beautiful moon just off to the side of her head. And it is lovely.
Well, thank you. Let's just start by talking about the obvious. You're a woman of many talents, including Olympic athlete, but writer, filmmaker, actress. I would love to just start by hearing about how you were inspired to pursue all these different paths and what, you know, what was instilled in you to make you feel like you can pursue all of these paths, because it's incredible. It's so amazing.
I think very much the way that things have unfolded for me is always knowing that if I wasn't following like my gut or my instincts, things would not work. Meaning I could never quite like force myself to do something that I wasn't wanting or felt energetic about doing, besides, you know, homework and the things you have to do when you're growing up. And I always had like an interest in writing and in performing. And that really came about first and earlier on. I was an athlete, you know, throughout my life, but the running really didn't take off until I found a team that I enjoyed running with, which wasn't until college. And it was after I think my like writing and performing itch began. And so I think some people look at an Olympian and it's hard to imagine that there was like ever any other kind of dream. But the truth was, for me, I didn't know that the Olympics were even a possibility. And so I had a lot of other passions, and then the Olympics became more possible. And I knew that doing that would inevitably help me in all areas of my life. You know, it's an experience. And it's not been so much like, I want to do all these things. It's more like these opportunities came about and I had interests, and I thought that I would be better served if I answered to the ones that felt inspiring to me, rather than, you know, focus on something that I wasn't truly excited about. I guess the answer to your question is, I don't think somebody has to sit down and be like, I want to be a multifaceted person. I think they just have to listen to what they feel like doing. And it could be one thing, it could be three, and it can shift. I think that's the like takeaway there, is that we don't decide to be multifaceted. I think we are compelled to, and we follow it and try and see them all as supporting one another.
Right. So you've been really open about your struggles with depression and suicidal ideation, especially after you competed in the 2016 Olympics. I would love to start just by hearing from you about your experiences with mental health and how that manifested for you.
Yeah. Well, so I feel like mental health was like, has always been like the most, the thing I'm most aware of, and also the thing I was like least educated about growing up, because my mom took her own life when I was almost five. I was 4 years old. Mm-hmm. And so from a very young age, I was like around that kind of energy and saw someone who just like was not able to find the right kind of help to get better. And at the same time, it was during a time when mental health wasn't in the conversation, and it was a really silenced thing. And so I was never really talked to about her and about it. And so I just came up with my own assumptions about mental health, which were, you know, a patchwork quilt of what people told me. And what I was told was that my mom was unhelpable and was so sick that she had to go. And like, she just had to do this. And it was a really sad way to grow up because, of course, you're 50% your mom, and you and her brother took his own life, and her mom, wow, his mom was sort of, you know, had some challenges. And I was scared of like, what if I ever felt something that reminded me of what she might have felt? Does that mean that I have to die? And that's terrifying. And so I grew up just wanting to be everything the opposite of my mom, because I didn't want to be in the territory of risking that I might have to die. And sure enough, I think when we fear something the most, you know, it often comes true. And I also think post-Olympic depression is something that everybody goes through, every athlete, regardless of winning gold, getting last, like it is a huge peak in your life. And it makes sense that there's a bit of a dip. And I think where we diverge in terms of like a healthy way to approach the dip versus what I experienced is if we can recognize that there's like an adrenal fatigue associated with chasing a big dream, we can give it the time to like come back, you know, like I imagine it like a marshmallow being squeezed really tight. And if you let go, it might come back. And I, on the other hand, like was very in denial that I was experiencing any kind of depression because I was afraid of what that might mean. Right. And so I denied it and just tried to press on. And that's the best way to make it worse.
I lost my dad to suicide when I was 16. And that's been absolutely a parallel feeling of knowing that, you know, mental health struggles are genetic and not wanting to, like working so hard to actively not feel that way that I'm fixated on that feeling. And then as exactly as you said, that kind of when you're in that mindset and you're thinking about it all the time, of course, like you're going to kind of gravitate towards there and it's going to be on your mind. So I appreciate you sharing that experience so much, because I think it's for anyone who has parents or close family members that have struggled with mental health or with suicide, that's such a real thing. What I'm curious to hear more about what you understood about mental health as a kid. Because you said that it wasn't talked about very often, but like what kind of conclusions did you draw, or like what point maybe in your young adult life did you realize like, oh, she wasn't crazy and unhelpable. Like there were resources that she just didn't have access to.
I guess I just thought that it was like a destiny or something, because people talk about it that way. And I think that's because they want to believe that there was no other way that it could have happened if it does happen. Mm-hmm. And I was mad at her. So I think I had like a really evolving relationship with her where I didn't know actually how she died until seventh grade. I thought she died of smoking because no one told me. And I just made that up because I knew she smoked. And in the 90s, there was a lot of like anti-smoking campaigns. So I was like, that's how she died. And then my best friend told me in seventh grade, and it was like a little humiliating because I guess everybody knew, but I didn't talk to my dad about it because I thought that it would hurt him. If he hadn't told me already, surely he didn't want me to know. Mm-hmm. And so instead I was just really mad at my mom and I like abandoned her grave and I was like, I'm not visiting her anymore. And all those petulant things you can do in seventh grade. And I didn't really understand her until I went through my depression, because what I found, so I was able to find these like worksheets from her treatment. Like while I was writing my book, Bravey, I dug those up kind of randomly and I found like a lot of the worksheets that her like help were helping her with, right? These facilities. And one of the most compelling ones that I think kind of explains what I now understand is that they made her do this worksheet that was, I like myself from A to Z. And there was all the letters of the alphabet. And she was meant to write adjectives after all the words to describe herself. And she was, you know, she was very, very sick. And so she wrote things like S, selfish, O, overcommitted, words like that. And somebody in the clinic or hospital helped her cross out those negative words and write positive words like selfless and overachiever or whatever words that you would rather feel. And the problem I saw with that when I was sick is that when I was sick, I felt selfish and I should be selfish because I was sick. And I couldn't force my feelings about myself to change. I needed to recognize what I was. And I think what I learned is that all the care she got was trying to force her feelings rather than her actions. And I learned that what they tried to do with her would not have helped me. And so she became very human to me because I was like, oh, she just got really crappy help, like just not great. And I totally understand why this stuff wasn't helpful. I also understand why someone thought it might be helpful to try to tell someone to just snap out of it.
Right.
So I think that just made her human. And I never wanted to understand her in that way in terms of like feeling what she felt, but that allowed us to like become closer, you know? I don't know what your journey has been like with that, but
yeah. Totally. No, honestly, so parallel. You know, spending so much time being afraid of feeling those feelings. And I think I've just with kind of the stigma that exists around suicide in our culture, like feeling like it's something that just happens to you that you don't have control over. And especially when, you know, that's something that you experience with a parent, it's like, okay, when inevitably am I going to do the same
exactly.
thing?
Exactly. Like inevitably, when am I going to, and does it, and also if you see photos of them or you knew them before they were unhappy, mine was just in photos. It's kind of bizarre. Cause you're like, why are they happy? They don't know what happens to them. Right. And that's like such a crazy feeling. Cause you're like, how could they not know? Do I not know? Like what's going to happen to me? Did she actually know? And that those smiles are fake. Like what is the truth? Right?
Totally. No, it's so true. And I spent so much time being afraid of that feeling. And then when I was in high school, like a year after my dad passed away, I experienced suicidal ideation. And it was obviously, as you know, so scary and just, I wouldn't wish it on anybody, but it did give me an understanding of my dad and of his mental health struggles. And that,
yeah,
you wrote about this in your book, like that he wasn't crazy. Your mom's not crazy. He wasn't like beyond help. It was just, that's what happens when your chemicals are that imbalanced or when you are sick or when you struggle with mental illness, that even though logically you can know nothing's permanent and that there is help, like that's just how your nervous system feels, is that there's no way out. And then, you know, like that it was such an intense experience, but really like it helped me understand for sure.
Yeah. And then it's like a sad, like it's sad because you're like, oh, that was like totally unnecessary. Like they didn't have to die. Right. And like, but it also makes you feel like, well, then nobody else hopefully has to either. And yeah, it's wild when you realize you're like as sick as they were. You're like, oh, we are the same. For a little bit, you know,
which is like the biggest fear.
Oh yeah,
like that's the thing.
Yeah, and you think you know. I think the biggest thing is thinking that you know your future, or like that's the like the most unhealthy thought. Because like we just simply can't. But I was so sure that I did. Like I was so sure that I was never going to be happy again. Basically,
right?
That's shocking. And yeah, well, how did you like navigate out of it? Or like, what did you do?
I mean, long story short for me, I have had the privilege of having access to mental health resources that, you know, my dad didn't have access to, or especially like when he was young and growing up. But having a mom that truly understood what I was going through and was very willing to talk to me about these things and very willing to provide me access to resources was like the biggest game changer for me. And then, just being honest about it and having conversations like this and being able to say to like my therapist or say to my mom, like, I'm afraid that I'm going to end up doing the same thing. I'm afraid that this is an inevitability for me. I'm so afraid of feeling this way. And being able to admit that and have people tell me like, that's totally understandable. That makes complete sense. Like took a lot of that stigma and a lot of that fear away for me.
It's like amazing to talk to you because I actually don't know that many people who have felt these feelings like this extreme. Like I know people with depression. I just don't know anyone who's had like, I guess what I had. I do feel like with this, it's interesting for me right now to be meeting someone who gets it because you don't, I don't know. You don't want someone to like look at you and just be like, you know, I like hope you're well now. Like, I hope you're okay. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, like we are. Or I don't know if yours is similar to mine where it was like a dip and then you could become okay again. Was that, mm-hmm. was your situation all like that?
It was, definitely genetic. And I've struggled with mental health my whole life, but for the most part, yeah, like I went through that really intense period before I was able to kind of realize what was happening for me.
Exactly. I feel fine, but I also feel like I understand that if I'm not careful, like it can happen. And totally. It's really nice to like talk to someone or meet someone who just like gets it, but isn't like delicate around me. I think that's it. Like, you don't want someone to look at you and be like, oh, you poor thing. You want them to look at you and be like, I see you.
Right. And it helps. I think there's just so much stigma around mental health, especially in the US, but especially around suicide and suicidal ideation. And I think once you've had that experience of realizing like you can get through it and it's also not something that makes you a crazy person or something. And once you've had an experience like that where you've been open around it and you've received resources around it, you kind of realize that.
Well, that's why for me to think about it as an injury was like a life changer because an injury is something that, I mean, some injuries can't heal. Like I understand there are some mental illnesses that like you just have to manage. Right. But for the most part, an injury is something that, first of all, it's not you. It's like, it's a thing that happens to you.
Right.
And there are paths and there's ways to approach it. And it's not a choice. Like, obviously you can, in retrospect, figure out like, did I put myself in a position to get injured or this and that? There's ways you can learn, but it's a little less personal. And that was really helpful is when I was like, okay, this is an injury.
Right. Yeah. Well, I want to hear more about for you, what that healing process looks like and, you know, how you realize, how you kind of accepted that like it was something you needed help with and not, you weren't pushing it to the side.
Yes. Well, I did not realize I needed help. Right. And I thought that honestly, like I could patch together. I was trying to basically go back in time. So for me, after the Olympics, I moved to this altitude place in the mountains, Mammoth, where I used to train. And I was trying to move there full time, change coaches, move up to the marathon, like really like know the next move and know it yesterday. And what I should have done is pause, you know, people do that after they give birth.
Right.
And I think I had an adrenal fatigue and I didn't recognize it. And so I was just spinning out and I stopped sleeping. So, and then that just digressed because I was in denial that that was a problem. I thought I had to keep going to get out of it instead of pause. And my dad, I think, saw red flags and he made me get help, which required me to go back to Oregon where I was living prior and find help because there was no one in person in Mammoth. So I had to move back to the town I was in. And that was awful. It was so hard to get an appointment. And I had to like ask someone who knew someone to beg for me to get these appointments. So I felt like I was an uphill battle to something that I didn't even think I needed.
Totally.
And first I had help from a life coach and that was absolutely miserable because she was like, go on a vacation. And I was like, this is like, and then I felt like I should go on a vacation. She was like, just relax. Like that's all you need is a weekend. And I was like, the thought of like going to the beach and just laying sounds like death. Like everything.
Right. She's being alone with your thoughts. That sounds like, awesome.
Or doing something that's supposed to make you happy and you know that it won't.
Yes,
that was 100%. The feeling. And so I kept trying like things like that where I was like, people are supposed to be happy at the beach, but I'm not. Right. And it makes you feel more alienated.
Totally.
So eventually got the real help and met one doctor who I did not connect with at all. And she was very, very disaster orient. I don't know. She thought I was going to die. And I was like, all right.
Which you don't need to hear.
Yeah. And she looked at me as if she was very concerned. And I think you don't want to be looked at in that way. You want to be looked at as though you're very seen.
Right.
So then I found a doctor, Dr. Arpaia, who, you know, was just the most, I knew he was like my person, you know, and I started going to him as if it was my training, like 3 times a week, intense. I did what he told me. We learned what was useful and what wasn't. And he taught me that my brain was a body part and it could get injured. He also helped me understand like I was objectively sick or injured, not it wasn't a choice. It's just, he's like, you are sick. and right. you can get better. And then he taught me that actions change first, then thoughts, then feelings, in that order only. And that was honestly the epiphany. And that's where the conversation about my mom comes full circle, where she was trying to force her feelings and being guided towards that. And I was being told the opposite, which is to focus on my actions.
Right.
And so I started thinking about myself as someone with a broken leg, or someone, or a crock pot soup, whatever resonates with you. But if you have a broken mm-hmm. leg, it's going to hurt every day for a long time. And it doesn't mean you're not healing. Mm. And if you're making a soup, the vegetables are going to look pretty like whole, hard, and not soup-like for a long time, but the soup is cooking. Mm. And so I thought of myself as that. And I just committed to the process, and it took months, but I knew I started to become less surprised that I was sad every day. I was like, this is normal. My leg is still mm-hmm. broken in my mm-hmm. brain. And so I felt I was on a path. And that I wish for everybody who has these challenges.
Right. And I wanted to bring up to you recently partnered with the wellness app Monarch that connects people yeah. with therapists. And I wanted to hear a little bit more about that and the importance of like accessibility to resources for you.
What I like about what they offer is that it's the parent company Simple Practice is a company that like doctors use for their own internal work. And so they have a reservoir that is like exists. So it's almost like this Monarch company has piggybacked, you know, and been created to connect people with these doctors that are already like thriving and good doctors. It's really user-friendly, which I know is like such a weird, you know, I feel like it's something that like my invisible mom would say, like, it's user-friendly, right. but like how important that is when you're sick is right. so important. And right. they're very thoughtful. Like the images on the website are all sketches. They're not real pictures. Mm. And I feel that like sometimes when you're sick, you like don't want to see yourself in other people, or you, because you do, you see yourself, you see it. You just make a lot of things up when you're sick. And so right. I feel like the experience there is something that is like most likely to help someone in need find help, use their insurance if they need to. And it's just a resource that I didn't have. And I think it would have made things a little easier for me, because it was, you know, I was a well-connected Olympic athlete, and it was really, really hard to get an appointment. And I can't imagine wow. if someone is in need and they don't have resources, people, or favors that they can ask.
Right. Especially when you are in the throes of that, the last thing you want to do is try to navigate this impossible system.
Yeah.
What is something that is giving you hope right now?
Well, I think the Osaka situation, if I had to like say today, because I feel mm-hmm. like yesterday was a big day for that. So mm-hmm. I think that is a really, it's hopeful because it's getting like the kind of attention that it should. And mm-hmm. I think it's inevitable that something shifts.
Totally.
So yeah, I think it's that.
I feel the same way. It's been really amazing to see that at the forefront of conversation and see, you know, while there are always going to be people that don't understand it, to see so many people advocating and supporting and wanting to utilize that for like a tangible change moving forward is super amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
thank you so much for being here, Alexi. It's so lovely to meet you and amazing to connect over the crazy shit. And it's yeah. you're so inspiring to me. And yeah, it's just been super profound.
Yeah. We're in like the dead parents club together. Yeah. And which is such a like terrible. I had actually a couple friends in high school who lost their moms, and one of them was like, it's the dead moms club. And I was like, yep. That's very sad and sweet, you know.
Well, what are you gonna do if you can't find the club? Like, you gotta have the club.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm here. You have my email, and thank you.
Thank you so much. We'll talk soon.
Talk soon. Bye.
If you like this episode, please subscribe in Apple Podcasts or Spotify and leave us a review.